All right, settle down, please. Okay, I'm going to start because I think you guys, some of you guys wait till free to come in. I'm supposed to start at free, right? Okay, so what we're going to do today, we're going to look at adversarial search. And this is section 5.1 to 5.4 of Russell and Norvig. So some people were asking me the other day about which edition of Russell and Norvig you should be looking at. And it's quite important that you look at the third edition. So many of the basic principles are the same. So, you know, bread first is still bread first. You know, its worst case performance will still, you know, nothing's changed there. But what's happened is that they've tinkered with some of the algorithms in the presentation of some of the algorithms in the, from the second to the third edition. So it may be a bit confusing if you're looking at the diagrams that I have in the slides and then reading from the second edition. So if you do decide to read from the second edition, right, for some of the bits, then you have to actually look at the algorithms that as they are given in the second edition. Otherwise, it will be a bit confusing because some of the way they work out, say, some of the performance measures are slightly different. So be aware of this, right? But really what you should be doing, you should be looking at the third edition, okay? So, all right. Okay, so what we're going to do, so last time what we looked at was basically the general notion of search, so uninformed search. So we looked at depth first, breadth first, depth-limited search and iterative deepening. So what we're going to do today is look at search, but in a different kind of, slightly different context, right? Where we don't just say you're going to, you know, just be doing something. In a way, it's not going to be unimpeded. You're going to be have to take into account that there, you know, there might be two agents trying to do something, right? So to be able to look at this, we're going to look at briefly. It's a very brief way. You know, there's a whole theory. There's a whole mathematical. You know, game theory is a whole big thing, right? So we look at games, you know, just in a very limited way here for just to motivate some of the ideas. So an introducing notion, we'll look at what it means to have, you know, one way of doing, you know, having optimal decisions in this case, depending on the move you're going to make during the game. We'll look at this notion of pruning. That's going to be important because to enable us to basically cut down on the search space. And imperfect and real-time decisions also will come into play because once it comes to the, you know, so big, a real, you know, a game such as chess, you know, things become much more complicated and then you can't, you know, you need to make some decisions and you need to decide where you're going to cut your tree or and things like that. Well, we'll come to this soon. Right, so, I mean, what's the difference between what we're looking at today, I mean, in a nutshell kind of thing, compared to what we looked at the other day, right? Or at least some of the things we looked at the other day. So what we're going to be interested in when it comes to games are what's known as zero-sum games of perfect information. So this is a well-defined mathematical concept, right? So from game theory. But we're not going to look at it from the game theoretical angle, really. I mean, not just, you know, looking at equilibrium and things like that. What this means for us is that we're going to be looking at deterministic, fully observable games, right? So fully observable situation or environment, and where you have two agents, maybe more, but usually you have two agents that are going to play in turn. They're going to do something. They're going to take turns, right? And you have a notion of utilities at the end of the game, which are going to be equal and opposite. This is this idea of zero sum. When you add the utility for one agent, it's going to be exactly, you know, if one is free, the other one's going to be minus three, so that the two utilities together cancel each other. Right? So that's the thing. The utilities at the end of the game are equal and opposite means basically they have the same magnitude but opposite signs. Right? And what do we have to take into account is that in this kind of situation when we're talking about this adversarial search that you may have some kind of an unpredictable opponent. Not completely like in the sense of being stochastic, right? But it's like they have a choice of things that they might do and you need to be able to decide what is the best move depending on what your opponent might try to do. Right? So you need to, in a way, specify a move for every possible opponent reply. So that's how the tree is going to unfold. And there might be other things such as time limits, because you know, you may be unlikely to find a goal because there might be that, and then you must approximate. So there may be a need to approximate and decide, I'm going to say, okay, I need to come up with something called an evaluation function, for instance, to give me an idea how good a particular state is. Right, so we'll see this. So there might be limits on the time, right? Because not all games may last forever, for instance. Okay? Any questions? You're all happy? This is just give you the general kind of setting and background. Right, so you know, one particular way we may look at this, if we look at tic-tac-toe, hopefully you all know this, noughts and crosses, right? So, you know, this is the, you know, one way of, it's not the full game tree, but it's part of the game tree where you have two players, it's deterministic, and each one take turn, right? So we assume we have two players, one called Max, you know, for reasons that are, you know, going to be pretty evident pretty soon, and one called Min. The idea of Max is that it's going to take maximize its utility, and Min is going to try and minimize. So one is going to be, for instance, minus one is going to be, so that's going to be like, for instance, the utility of each terminal state there, down there, from the point of view of Max. So something like this at the bottom there, where crosses where wins, so that's going to be a plus one. But something where noughts win, so that's going to be a minus one. So that's not very good for Max. So the thing to look at this is this tree is going to be drawn in this case from the point of view of Max playing first. So one agent going to play first, one player. So we call it the player Max, who's going to try and maximize. So that's the tree unfolding from his perspective. So he does the first move, so he puts an X first, right? And then it's going to try and build a tree and decide, okay, if I put an X in this position, what are the possible ways that Min has to play? So Min is going to then decide where to put a note, right? See, all of these, right? So it could put a, so if I put an X there, in this, if we look at this particular state, right? So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, there are 9 possibilities to start with because it's a grid which is 3x3, right? So once it says, okay, if I look at this one, I put an X there, where can Min put a note, right? So it could be there, it could be there, it could be there, and then there are all sorts of other possibilities. There should be 8 of these, right? So and then once it's done this, what are my possibilities based for that one, right? There'll be more branches under each one of these, right? So you're trying to exhaust all the possibilities. And eventually you reach a state where no possible moves, there are no possible moves anymore, right? And this can be either this where actually Min has won, so basically Max says this is minus one for me, I don't like this. Or this one is a draw, so utility is zero. Or this one where Max has won, so X has won there, and the utility is plus one. Okay? So Max has moved first. Are you happy with this? So the idea is that going to try and build a tree to try and explore all the possible moves and find what are the ones that are going to be positive or going to be good for Max. And that's what Max wants, you know, in this case, right? If he's trying, if you look at Max, he's trying to maximize. So that's just a convention here. It could be that you decide that Min is going to start first, right? Then it's going to be the tree born from the point of view of Min. That's not a problem, right? So it just, at least one has to start. So we just, whoever moving first, that's the tree for that player. Okay? So that's a possibility. So you'll see this, I think, no, we don't look at this in, there's a different tree in the tutorial for next week, so you'll see that for a different game. Okay? So that's one way of looking and doing the tree. So what do I mean then? There's the notion of optimal decision, right? So in normal search, the optimal decision is just a sequence of actions that's going to lead to one goal, to a goal state. There could be more than one, but usually there's a goal state. So in this case, you know, if you said there's only one player playing and playing against nobody for some reason, somehow, right? Sometimes have you ever, you know, you're playing both X and North or whatever, or just X is filling it, then there will be a winning terminal state of some kind, for instance. But what happens in adversarial search is not the same, right? You have that, you may be making a move, but somebody else has something to say, right? So Min, if Max is making a move, Min has a say in the game too, right? So what Max needs to do is to find a strategy that's dependent on what Min is doing. So a contingent strategy which specifies Max's move in the initial state, right, where it's going to put the X, for instance. And then next, Max wants, it has to put moves in states resulting from every response by Min to its initial move, right? So, and so on. So then Max, what sort of moves it has to do resulting from every response by Min to all the moves that it made in response to move, so, and so on and so forth. This is the way it goes, right? They alternate, so you have to be able to do this. So that's what we have in this tree here, right? So Max moves, Min can do, so Max has all these possibilities, and Min under each one, Min can do all sorts of things, and Max has to do and decide again what to do under this. And it alternates like this until nothing is possible. In this case, you can exhaust the search space fairly quickly. right? So what we have then is a notion of what's, you know, of a utility for max in being in a corresponding state, in a particular state S, right? So that's known as the minimax value of a node, right? And how is this worked out? Well, it's fairly easy. So the utility of the minimax value of, say, a terminal state, right? So if it's terminal, it's just the utility that's attached to this, right? So in this case, you know, for this one, it would just be -1, this one 0, and this one +1, right? And what do you do for this one if it's if the player is max, right? So at this level of the tree, if you're saying, you know, it's max turn to play, then it's just going to be the minimax. So we assume that this computes this. It's just going to be the result of doing this move, right? Of doing a particular move, a particular action. So you maximize over all the possible actions from a particular state, right? So a particular state, all possible actions, and max is going to pick whatever is the maximum, right? So that's what can happen there. We'll see this in the next slide. And what min does, if it's a min node, then it's going to pick the action that's going to minimize the result there. That's going to have the least value, right? So the least value there. So it's going to minimize this. Okay, let's see. Maybe that will become clearer over the tree here, right? So here's a tree. We just make up a game, you know, which, you know, doesn't necessarily mean anything. So this is a tree again from the point of view of max, right? So max is going to make the first move, so it's only 2-ply tree, right? So only 1, 2 levels, right? So we're going to assume it's perfect play. So both players are playing optimally, right? So one thing that's quite important with these kind of games is that players may not necessarily play optimally, but we can't take this into account. We assume that max is always going to go for the maximum value and min is always going to go for the minimum value. If this is not the case, then we cannot use minimax or any of these kind of algorithms, right? So the idea is to choose a move to position with highest minimax value, which is basically the best achievable payoff against the best play. So we're assuming both players are playing optimally, right? So what we can do, the idea is that, you know, if this is our full tree and these are the leaf nodes there, these are the terminal states, right? So max here has a value attached to each one of these, right? So what happens in case of the minimax, so min has to choose something there. So remember, min has to make sure that max has as small as possible a value, right? So what min is going to do is going to pick the least value of these there, right? So 3 in this case, right? And in this node, if max makes this move, right, so what min is going to do is also has to pick something that's not going to give a large utility to max. So it's going to pick 2, right? So that's the minimum of all those. And here again, it's going to be 2. But in this bit, it's max turns to move. So max has to pick the move that's going to give it, you know, highest utility. So it's going to go for 3. So meaning this is the value that max can achieve at this point. It's 3, right, at the root node. So basically for max, the best move would be to go there because then it knows that min is going to go there, right? It has no other choice. It doesn't want to go to any of this because this gives a much higher utility to the terminal state for max. Are you happy with this? Right, so max is trying to achieve to get the highest score possible at the end, the highest utility possible, but min is going to try and prevent it from, you know, obviously it's going to try and make it as small as possible when it's its turn to move. So that's why in the end it ends up being just 3, right? Any questions about this? No? Yes? Yeah? No, so so what's going to happen? So they look at the next, really what happens is that the values are being pushed up the tree, so they only look at one level down, because the value has to start right from the bottom. So in here, this tree is a bit small. Maybe if you had 10 levels, the values would start right from the bottom and get pushed up, and so for instance, so then each one in turn will decide. Right? So here, so if this is this, so this only has to look at whatever the values are just down there, because, you know, if you had more branches, the value would have moved up. So it's a recursive algorithm that starts from the bottom and moves the values up. So any particular time, you only need to look at your child nodes. But the values that are there are coming from right from the bottom, they've been moving up the tree. Does that make sense? No? Kind of? So they only look at one level down, right? Because the values will be there. They look at this, when min is its turn to move here, it only needs to look at all the possible, what are the values that are there in this case. You know, how are these values here in this case, because the tree is only 3 deep. So how did max decide what to do? It had to look there, but to be able to find this value, the value had to come from further down. So recursively, it's moving up the tree. So, but it, once it's at this stage, it only looks at this, this, and this, and decides which one is going to be bigger for it. Right? Is this, yeah. So this is what it says here, right? So you, the idea is that you proceed all the way down to the tree, to the leaves of the tree, right? So you find all the values. Depending on what node it is, it's turn to move above the leaf, you decide what to do. Then the minimax value are backed up through the tree, right? So here's the algorithm there. So you've got a particular state and you need to return a particular action. And if it's max playing, you know, if we assume this is max going first, it's going to return the action that's going to have the largest minimum value, right? So this is what this says here. So it's going to return the largest of all the minimum values that min has found, right? That's what this is saying here, because it's each turn. So it's actually mutually recursive algorithm. So max value, what it does, it says, okay, it tests if something is terminal, right? If it is, then it just says this is the utility. So in this case, it would test, is this a terminal node? Yes, so that's the utility of this. Is this a terminal node? That's a utility. If this is a terminal node, yes, it's a utility there, right? So, but otherwise, what it would do, it says, okay, if it's not a terminal state, then it says, okay, I'm going to initialize this variable v to minus infinity, so that's the smallest possible. And then for each of my action, I'm going to try and find something that's bigger than v. I'm going to pick the maximum value that I can find for all the children, right, that have been, you know, that's going to be the maximum. And how do you find all the values that are attached to the children? It's the values that min is going to pick at the next level, right? Does that make sense? So max chooses the maximum of the values that min is going to pick, would pick at the level further down. So max, in this case, will pick the maximum of the values that min would find at this level, right? And then it does, so that's what it does, and it returns this value. So that's why, in this case, you end up with a value of 3 there, because it picked that one. These are all the values that min found, and 3 is the maximum of all of these, so it's 3. And what min does is the opposite, right? So what it does, it tests whether it's terminal, etc., same as before. Then it says, okay, this is the highest it can ever be. Then what it does, it finds all the values that max returns and picks the minimum of this, because it wants max to have a small, again, I mean, reward as possible at the end of the game. So it picks the minimum of all the values. So that's what we have here. So these are the values that max has at this point, because it's max turn. So there should be a max there, really. But it's okay, so this is max turn, the up triangle is max. So then it picks the minimum of these here, so it's 3. And picks the minimum of this, it's 2, and the minimum of this, it's 2. Questions? No? So yeah, you need to know this algorithm. But really, so what you want to see here is the fact that it's a mutually recursive algorithm. This one calls this one calls this one. And that's what enables you to get the alternate time bit, right? So max is going to try and is going to pick the maximum of the minimum values that are found below it, because min is choosing just one ply below, and min is going to pick the maximum, and min is going to take the minimum of the maximum values that max finds just one ply under it, because that's what max is going to do, is going to look for, because it's the one choosing just underneath it, okay? So this is the minimax algorithm. So what can we say about this? So as usual, we use the four dimensions that I mentioned yesterday. Well, is it complete? Well, yes, it's complete if the tree is finite. Seems obvious, because you can go all the way down to the tree, find all the utilities attached to the final states or the leaf nodes, and move everything up, and you will find a way of choosing the best, the optimal move as far as max is concerned, if max is going first, right? That's what this bit says. It is optimal, because in this case, for instance, it will choose this move, which is optimal given that it has to play against min, right? There's nothing, no way, compared to the others, that's the best thing it can get, if both players are playing at their best, right? So that's the important thing. So what's the time complexity? It's O to the B of n, because you may have to expand the whole tree, right? And space complexity is just like depth first, so it's not that high. It's just B times m, right? So you remember the B and the m's are from yesterday, hopefully, right? So what does this mean if we're looking at chess, though, right? Where the branching is approximately 35, so your tree has like branching of 35 actually for under each node, and m, the depth of the search space, can be 100 for reasonable gains, right? So nothing exceptional. So what does this mean? This means that really, if you had to explore the whole tree, that's really not possible, right? So it would be 35 to the power of 100. If you had to use minimax algorithm with this, that's not really at all possible, right? So what we would like to do is to find a way of eliminating large parts of the game tree. Well, even if it's not just for, maybe not even just for that, but any tree that goes above a certain number of level of branching, right? So is there a way of doing this? And this is where we bring this idea of pruning. So we take our same tree. What we're going to try and do is to see, Are there branches or particular branches where, which I can chop really early on and not explore because there's no point going down there? It's not going to give Max a higher value, right? So here's this idea of alpha beta pruning, right? So we're going to have the same tree as before. So remember, so this is Max going to play, and it finds, so it goes all the way down at this level there. So these are the utilities that get attached to the terminal values that, you know, the terminal states that are there, 3, 12, and 8. So min picks the minimum of this, right? So this is the tree being explored, right? So we're not going to do the whole tree. We're just going to assume we're going to try and see how much of the tree we need to explore. So what happens once it's found a value of 3 there, min is going to pick the minimum of the values there. What Max knows is that, well, it's going to get, you know, if it makes this move, it can get 3, but maybe when it has to make its move, it can have something that's greater than 3. It knows it's going to get a move which is valued at 3 at most, at least, right? Which is going to be at least 3, right? So it's something that's going to be at least 3 there, right? A value of 3. So using this, hopefully you can decide if I see something that's going to look less promising, that's going to be less than 2, I can stop. Less than 3, I can stop. So it starts moving on this one. So this is it. So this is the thing. So it looks at the, text message? Yeah. No, the lecture's not over yet. So we move there, so it goes there and it does this particular branch there and it finds, okay, at the bottom there, the value that Max has is 2, right? So this there goes up there. So what does this mean? This means when min has to choose, right, it's not going to pick anything that's going to be greater than 2, right? The most that it can, that it's going to give is 2. What does that mean for Max? Max means for Max, right? There's no point looking at any of these because it already has a 3 it knows it can get a 3 there, right? The best that Max can get for this, given that min is playing to the best of its ability, is that is a value of 2. You follow this? So what does this mean? This means there's no point looking at these extra branches there, right? So you can prune this and say, okay, remember, so in this case it's trivial. It's only 2 nodes that are not going to be explored. But this could be a much bigger tree, right? So it could be that you've gone all the way down and propagated 2 there, and these are very, very, very deep. So you can say, okay, I don't need to look at these. Right, so immediately it says, okay, I don't need to look at these two nodes there, so I can chop the branches there. So what about this? So it's saying now, I still know I can get 3, but there's another branch, so what do I do for this one? It goes to this, right? Remember, it's exploring the tree and finding the values as it goes along, so it says, oh, there's a possibility of me having a utility of 14 there. So meaning, you know, if I were to make this move, I don't know what's coming next, there's a possibility that I could get something which is up to 14. Right, so this looks pretty promising because that would be higher than 3, right? So I should carry on exploring this particular branch there, right? Because hopefully I can get something that's going to be higher than 3, which is the best that I have so far, right? So it goes, oops, this one is 5. So now it has to change the bound. It says, okay, the best I can get is really not 14 anymore, it's 5. But that's still better than 3, so I should keep going because maybe, you know, there's another 5 there, so definitely I'll get a 5 there, and making this move would be advantageous for me, right? Because then min would be forced to choose 5. So it does this, but unfortunately, it's a 2. So once it does this and it realizes, okay, that's it, I've exhausted the tree, the best I can get therefore is a 2, I'm going to have a 3 at the top, so which is what we had before. So you prune this, so by not exploring this, nothing's been lost. Really, and we can show this just with a little bit of algebra. So our minimax value of root and hence minimax decision independent of the prune leaves, they are, right? If we assume that these are values u and v, just two arbitrary, you know, just two constants there, we don't know what they are. So the minimax of this root there is going to be the max, in this case, of the min of 3, 12, 8, right? So it's going to be take the min of this, of these 3, and the min of this 2 UV and the min of 14, 5, 2, right? So we can simplify this. So it's going to be the max of 3, the min of 2 U and V, and the min of this is just 2, right? What does it mean to say you have the minimum of 2 and two other values? It means it's some value Z that's going to be at most 2, right? If it's the minimum of these 3 variables there, right? You're not going to pick 3 there, it's not the minimum, right? So it's got to be at most 2. So it's the maximum of 3, something which is less than or equal to 2, and another 2, so it has to be 3. So basically, this is just a little bit of algebra showing that, you know, the fact that I've proven never bothered to discover what the values were for these two nodes doesn't change anything, right? So which is good, because basically what this means is that the value, you know, doing the alpha beta pruning there, so doing the pruning of these branches didn't change the fact that I had a complete algorithm, you know, that it would be complete if the tree is finite, right? So any questions? No? All right. So what we're saying is that pruning does not affect the final result for a finite tree, obviously. So it doesn't affect the final result, as we saw for just this previous example. But the interesting thing is, right, so it's not just that. There's something quite important, is that the ordering of the move that you do actually improves the effectiveness of pruning. The pruning that we saw for the previous example could actually be better. So how could it be better? How could this pruning be better? You know, remember, this is Max exploring its tree just to try and figure out what's the best move that it should make next, right? So how could it be better as it's exploring it? How could this be better? This one?
Yeah,
exactly. If there was some heuristic it could use somewhere when it's exploring, instead of exploring something which is going to be 14, and instead it found this one, absolutely. Then what would happen if it had two? It would just prune the other one just as before. Exactly. So that's exactly it. So the order of the expansion does make a difference. So, you know, in a deeper tree, so in this one it's a bit trivial, maybe it's a bit more difficult because it's just a final state there, right? So, but if you had a tree, so if there's a way of gauging how good each one of these is, then you can order and decide which one you're going to choose to maximize the pruning, right? So a good move ordering improves the effectiveness of the pruning, and we can show this with just the previous example. If this had been discovered first, you would stop immediately and not try to find these particular ones or expand these ones or find their values in this case, right? So assuming we can come up with some kind of perfect ordering of some kind, of course, in practice, it's not possible. If you had a perfect ordering, well, yeah, if you had a perfect ordering, you would answer everything. So assuming there is a way of coming up with some kind of ordering which is perfect, then the time complexity of alpha beta pruning is only of the order of b m divided by 2. So what does this mean? This means that effectively by using alpha beta pruning, you can change the branching factor from b to square root of b. So you can, you know, see 36, it can become 6, right? And the alternate way of looking at this is that it can double the depth of the search compared to minimax. So what you can do with minimax, in the same time, you can go twice to the depth that minimax could do using alpha beta pruning, so which is quite good. So then meaning you can actually see more of the tree, really, right? So what this is, right, is a simple example of the value of reasoning about which computations are actually relevant, right? So that's a simple idea of what's known as a simple example of meta-reasoning. So meta-reasoning is when you're actually trying to, you're doing more than just trying to do what's in front of you. You try to reason about the program itself as well, what it could be doing or not be doing, right? So you reason about which computations are actually relevant. And it's quite important, and we see that that's a lot of this happens in AI, where you have heuristics, where you have meta-reasoning. So it's reasoning about reasoning, right, in a way. Any questions? All right. So this means we can, you know, go a little bit more into this algorithm or the alpha beta pruning algorithm. So one question is, why is it called alpha beta? So it's just two variables. So the idea is that alpha is the value of the best choice found so far at any choice point along the path for max, right? So it's the highest value in this case. If we assume max is trying to maximize things. So it's going to be the value of the best choice that's been found along any path, any choice point for max, right? So what we do is that if at any point there's a value like there, which is V, which is worse than alpha, right? So this is the best choice, this is the best value that's been found so far for max. If at any point there's something which is V, which is worse than alpha, so in this case meaning it's less than alpha, right? Then max will avoid it. There's no point for max to go down this branch because min will choose this eventually and that's not good for it, right? It's found something which is better already, so why keep going down that branch, right? So this branch just gets pruned. So what it's trying to say is that you store the best value you found so far and you compare every other values against this. If you find something which is worse than this, you know, for max it's something that's going to be less than alpha, you don't want to keep going down that branch because there's nothing to be gained out of this because, remember, min is always trying to pick something which is smaller, so you will lose. So what you do then, you define it similarly for min, it's just basically the opposite. So, well, it's the same thing, except that when we're talking about minimizing, it's going to pick, if it finds a value that's greater than beta, it's going to just say, no, I don't want this because max is going to pick this and it's not in my favor, right? Okay. Happy with this? General, just the general idea there? Okay. So if you're happy with this, then we can look at the algorithm. So this is the alpha beta search. So you have a state, right? So you're going to initialize it by saying, okay, let's do the max value. So we assume that max goes first again, right, at the top. And you give it two values, so that's the whole range it can have. It's going to try and figure out what values to attach to the various, what are the values that it should be attaching to a particular, it's trying to find the value that it should attach to the state, the initial state, and it's going to return the action that's going to maximize, that's going to have this particular value for that particular state. Sorry, so action state just gives you all the possible values to start that falls from that, that follow from this particular state, and it's going to find the one that's going to be the maximum, right? So, and how does the max value work? So it takes a state and takes the two bounds, right, alpha and beta, and it's going to return a utility value for that particular state. So it's easy if the state is terminal, right? It just says, okay, if it's terminal, I'm right at the bottom of the tree, I just return the utility attached to this particular leaf there, right? Otherwise, right, I'm going to try and find the maximum value. What's the worst that I can do? It's like minus infinity. I'm going to have this, and I'm going to try and do something better than that, basically, right? So for each of the actions that follow from that particular state you're in, right, so find the maximum value. Well, first of all, find the min value. So call min value. We'll see this on the next slide. So let min try and find all the values that attach a particular value to all the possible state that can follow from each action. So for each action, you know, if I do this action in this particular state, oh, actually, so you see this is a typo. This should be state there in Russell and Novig. There's an S that doesn't attach to anything. So that should state, right? So if you're in state and you do this particular action, see, Russell and Novig. Yeah, so you know, should still buy the third edition. So the problem is, because they've updated it, but the S was from the second edition. I remember this. Oh yeah. So you see, even Novik from Google makes mistakes. So here you go. So this is saying, if the result from state, if I do this action in state, and I get a new state, so what I should do is to try and find the min value for each possible action, and then I'm going to pick the maximum of this compared to V, right? And I'll assign this value to V, right? So if I found V, and I found that V is going to be greater or equal to beta, so remember, right? So this means it's a value that's not, for min, it's not a good value, then I can prune, I can return V immediately. I don't want to keep going, right? Because the value is worse for min, and so won't ever be chosen by min. Do you follow this? So you find the maximum of all the minimal values, right? And some V that you initialize the thing with. If it's worse than what min has already, right? In this case, it's greater. It means that this is not good for min, right? It's not something it wants to go further into. So it's going to just prune it. You just return the value for this, and you don't keep looking at the other one. So why is it pruning? Because you break out of the loop, right? That make sense? Yeah? So you just return, so you don't keep going looking at the other action. So you do one action at a time. If not, if you didn't prune, then you find what's the maximum of alpha and V, right? So you're going to just try and see whether you can update. Maybe you found a value that's greater than the alpha that you had before. So maybe it's going to be like 5 or whatever. You had 3 and it's 5 now and it's greater, right? So this is the new value that I can have. And you return the V there, right? So alpha is the value of the best. That is, I should have mentioned this before probably, is the value of the best, that is the highest value choice found so far at any choice point along the path for max. But I said this previously. And beta is the value of the best, that is the lowest value choice found so far at any choice point along the path for min, right? So min is never going to try and do something and keep, there's no point in keeping going if you know you found a value that's greater than the min that min has already, because min is not going to try and give this to you. So how does max work? Max is what we've seen in the previous, in the actual tree, right? It tests again if it's terminal. If it is, it just attaches a utility there. So sorry, min, it just attaches a utility there. I have to be careful, I'm going to confuse you thoroughly otherwise. So this is min there. And it says, okay, I'm going to try and find something which is smaller than plus infinity. So here again, so for each action, what it does, it says, okay, let's find what values max are going to return for each of the children there, right, for each of the resulting state of doing this action from state, and I'm going to pick the minimum value there, right? If the minimum value that I found is less than alpha, so this is exactly this, if the minimum value that I found, it's 2, is less than alpha, so alpha at this point is 3, right? If it's something that's less than alpha, there's no point going on, right? Because I know Max is never going to try and keep, he's not going to try and do any more here because there's no point. So you prune this value, so you prune this value as this value is worse for Max and so won't ever be chosen by Max, right? So it's, if I had a 3 already there and I find a 2 there, I don't need to carry on because that's not going to be any good for me. So you break out of the loop. Otherwise, you just try to see whether you can update the value of beta, right? So whether there's something that's, you know, can make it even smaller for beta in terms of the value. Maybe you found a 1 there, right? So, it's a bad example. Maybe it was 3, maybe you found 2.5 or something like that, which is not good either. So maybe you found 5. That's what I want. So it's something that's going to be the minimum of beta and V. No, you want something which is smaller if possible that fits between the two. And you return V. Does that make any sense? It's actually very difficult to go through this like this. So any questions about this? Do you get the gist of what's going on at least? No? Because that's the important thing, because obviously you need to go through this again. Any questions? So this particular bit is the one that we saw. So basically, when you look at the tree here, so max will call max value there, min will call min value here, and max will call max value here. And these ones are easy because they're just basically terminal states, so it's just a utility. And when min does this, it keeps going, and this is the value that it finds that gets assigned to alpha there. And then if you find anything less than alpha, you just stop. You don't keep going exploring you don't keep exploring the other possible states that would result from doing the various actions. Questions? No? Right, because it's this, right? So because they alternate each one in turn. So look at this. So for Max, so Max is the one that's building the tree, right? So when Max is trying to decide here, what is it picking? It's going to say, okay, find the max. What does Max call? Max call the function min, because min is going to try and find the minimum underneath it. So min is going to call max, because max is going to try to find the maximum for this there, because it's each one in turn. So that's why it alternates. So max is going to call min to try and pick the best value that min might choose for it. So it's going to say, min is going to try and find the smallest value, and it tries to, min is going to try and find the minimum of the maximum values here. So this is max turn. So it finds all these values, min will pick the minimum. And here again, so these are all the values that will be returned to min by min value at this level, right? And max is just going to pick the maximum of these. In this case, it's 3. So the reason one calls the other is because they alternate. I know it's another which is mutually recursive. So min is going to try and look for the minimum of the max values because max is the one that's underneath it. Remember, so you're trying to find what are the values for the result of being in that state. So this is state there, right? And doing that particular action. So you're one step further down in the tree. You're looking at, from that particular state, you're looking at this one and you're saying, okay, do this, do this, do this, do this. You know, find all the value because if... Exactly, what happened to the state underneath. So it's recursive. And this one, remember, max value itself calls min again until basically they reach, the only time they bottom out is when they reach the leaf node, right? So that's where the value then starts to move up. Yeah, so that's why it's naturally mutually recursive because they alternate in turns. So one uses the information and the other function finds. And this tree, you know, even though we're talking about min and max playing, this tree is being built by just one agent. It's max trying to decide. So that's the thing to bear in mind. It's max trying to decide which one it's going to pick at the root there, right? So it tries to build this tree and tries to simulate what's going on and all the possible choices that it can make and min can make. Question? More questions?
Can we write infinity?
Infinity?
Yeah, because in the code there is infinity.
Well, yeah. So it could be anything that you believe is larger than any of the utilities. So that's a bit of you're right. So it could be like machine arithmetic or something. The largest possible integer that you can represent. But in the code, there's infinity. Then you need to come up with something that sort of, Or maybe you add infinity as an extra something which is outside. Yeah, you can't do, otherwise you can't. Yeah, you're right. So it's just trying to say that I'm trying to initialize it to something which is as the smallest possible that I can think. These are all practical issues. When it comes to practice, then what do you do? Absolutely. But this is like the abstract thing, yeah. No infinity in real life, as we know. Always there. So now comes other issues, right? So let's assume we have something like this. It's all very good to be able to do this, but let's assume we have 100 seconds and we can explore 10 to the 4 nodes in per second. What does this mean? This means we can explore 10 to the 6 nodes per move, right? So that's one way of looking at it. We have 100 seconds, we can explore this. But is that enough, right? The problem is, you know, compared to what the number of nodes that you have in chess, this is not much, right? So what very often happens is that you're going to have what's known as a cutoff test. So this is the standard approach to trying to deal with huge trees and when you have a resource limit such as time, right? So what you're going to do, your tree is huge, you can only go that, you can only explore that many nodes, meaning that you're only going to move your exploration to a certain depth in the tree. What you need to do is to have, instead of saying, is it a terminal state, you're going to have what's known as a cutoff, right? And for instance, it could be a depth limit, right? So such as, for instance, you attach this and say, okay, up to this depth, I'm only going to go to up to this depth. And maybe you can add things, which something which is known as quiescent search. Basically, what that tries to do is to search for interesting positions to a greater depth than quiet ones. So there are ways of doing this that you can make it more interesting, as opposed to just saying, here's the cutoff, and you know. But there are ways of going through the search space slightly more interestingly. But anyway, the thing to bear in mind is that if you have limited resources, such as time, there's only so much of the tree you'll be able to explore if it's a big tree. So there needs to be a cutoff test of some kind. And then what happens though, remember, if you're cutting off, you're saying, this is my tree, and I'm going to cut off at depth 10, right? And it goes to depth, I don't know, 10,000 underneath. What are you going to do? Remember, before, if you were able to go all the way down to the tree, hopefully you could attach a value or a utility to that leaf node, right, to that terminal state. So, you know, you say, okay, being in that state where I win is plus 1, if I lose it's minus 1, if it's a draw is 0. But if you're cutting off, how do you come up with a value for this node that's just basically used to be in the middle of the tree and there's nothing being backed up? So now what you need is to do something such as have an evaluation function. So this is where it becomes more heuristic in nature, right? So then you come up with an estimate of the desirability of a particular position at the cutoff. So things become more interesting then, and actually this is more realistic, right? So you can't, most of the time you can't explore the full tree unless it's something which is relatively trivial. So for instance, what could be an evaluation function, so very often it's going to be some kind of linear weighted sum of some kind of features you have to decide about the particular problem you're tackling. So this is where knowledge of a particular problem, of a particular environment, of a particular situation can come in, right? So this is one particular heuristic, right, in terms of coming up with an evaluation function, right? So it's some kind of, you have a weight that's going to, you know, a weight function or weights that are going to sort of be attached to particular features, and you're just going to sum all this. So for each weight, each wi is a weight, and each fi is a feature of state s of some kind. So if it's in chess, let's assume we decide we're going, our queen is going to have type 1, king is of type 2, so that, you know, this w1 applies to queens, this is king, etc., etc. Then what we do, it could be like, you know, for instance, the weight, the evaluation function will be fi will be the number of pieces of type I on the board, right? How many queens, how many kings, whatever. Well, king one. How many pawns, etc. you may have. And the wi is going to be the value of the piece of type I. So for instance, loads of a pawn is only 1. I don't know, a bishop is 2 or whatever, right? So you try and come up with some heuristic way of qualifying the how good a particular board configuration is, or a particular state is in this case, right? You know, this can be very naive, but it could be something, you know, based on what, you know, somebody who's played a lot of chess can come up with something much more intelligent, right? So this is just trivial in this case, right? So what happens in this case, then your algorithm suddenly becomes dependent on coming up with good evaluation functions, right? And we're going to see more of these evaluation functions later. And they become quite crucial because now suddenly you're bringing something in which is completely, which is a heuristic, which is not absolute, that you can't guarantee that it's correct. It's just something based on the problems of, you know, whatever problem you're tackling, right? So what happens in this case, then, you know, you have the minimax cutoff, you have a notion of a minimax cutoff now, which is identical to the minimax value we had before, except that instead of having a terminal test, you don't have this anymore because you've cut off your tree. Basically, you need to say, okay, is this a cutoff? Have I reached the cutoff now, right? And once you're there, what do? You need to evaluate, give a particular value to this particular node, which is at the cutoff, right? So you try to test, okay, instead of having a utility, which was a definite value you could attach to a particular state, a terminal state, you're going to have your evaluation function try and give you some idea how good this particular state is where you've done the cutoff, right? Any questions? So there's no, obviously, there's no magic recipe for doing this, right? It depends on the problem. It depends on whomever is coding up the algorithm and can come up with good evaluation function, right? Or maybe, you know, one way this could be done, actually, they have tried this, is to come up with some kind of learning algorithm that's going to improve over time in terms of coming up with better and better evaluation functions. Actually, this kind of things fit quite nicely when it comes to neural nets, where you have the notion of weights that start to vary as you go along. You're learning what's the optimum weight in terms of doing better and better, or optimum vector of weights, I should say, right? So what does this mean? So in practice, right, all of this, if I have B of M is 10 to the 6, right, if I can only do 10 to the 6 move, and my tree is like 35 branching, right, so this means I can only go to depth 4 without, you know, if I'm just trying to do minimax or just with a cutoff like this, right, and nothing else. So basically, this means I can only unfold my tree, my chess, you know, playing, you know, a tree for playing a game of chess up to ply 4 plies. So level four levels, right? And basically, this is pretty hopeless because it's like, you know, barely a human novice player can, well, it's a human novice, have to be careful there. So basically, it's somebody who's just learning. And apparently, so 8 plies a typical PC, it's probably better, slightly better now, or human master at least, right? And 12 plies like things such as Deep, you've heard of Deep Blue, right? And Deep Blue and Kasparov, so, you know, these are like, you know, masters among masters, basically. So really, you know, if you're just trying to say, you know, tomorrow you're going to try and code up alpha, beta pruning or whatever, and just trying to do this for chess, and just do it very naively like this, you know, you don't stand much choice if you have 100, what was it? If you have like 100 seconds. I mean, I'm guessing these days, you know, this is probably slightly, you can do a bit better now because, you know, faster the architecture, but only so much faster, right? So there's not much, you know, in terms of doing all these kind of things in practice, if you're just talking about these kind of, you know, simple algorithm, there's not much hope for chess. And it's even worse for, what game do you know it's even worse? There's no hope whatsoever. We still can't do it. Yeah, exactly. Forget about Go. Still forget about Go. Even with the best possible ways of doing it, we still can't crack it. So apparently the best Go players in the world refuse to play any machine. It's not worth their time. It's true. It's actually true. So yes, there you go. They refuse to compete against computers. Not too bad. So, and the branching is greater than 300. So you know about Go? If you don't, you should check it out. It's so some people. Anybody play Go here? You do? Do you guys play together? Hey, here you go. Only two. Wow. Do you all play? Okay, let me find a game you may play on Facebook. What is it you play on Facebook? What is it? Farmville! Do you guys play Farmville? Oh no. Yeah, Facebook is going to dumb us all down. It's already doing it, but it's big time. So this is just some things you should read, you know, just you can read about it. It's not, you know, you don't need to memorize any of this, right? It's just for general information, right? So it's not like, you know, I'm going to ask you, when did Deep Blue defeat Kasparov? So it's not going to be something like that, but it's, what's that? Oh, no. Right, so this is just some of the things that's going on. But the interesting thing is this, is that you can hardly do that. So there's some good games there. I mean, do any of you play bridge or anything like that? So they've been able to do some good bridge programs. And in the past, we've had people doing research here on bridge playing programs for, you know, for MSCs and undergraduate projects and PhDs. And actually, they've done some really, really good work. It's still, so some of these fields are really quite open. And of course, there's poker as well, right? There's a lot of this going on. Anyway, so this is supposed to say games are fun to work on, but what I mean, right? So it's, you know, games. So this is moving to the world of games here, but there's some more abstract mathematical notion of games, right? So this is what we sort of looked at a bit more in terms of trying to specify the notion of utility. But this is not even scratching the surface of anything to do with game theory or anything like that. So don't even think about saying that, you know, I said anything about game theory, really. I just gave you an idea of playing a two-person game in the context of some AI, right? So they illustrate several points about AI, right? First of all, you know, one point they illustrate is that, you know, you have these alternate players and you need to come up with recursive algorithms, for instance, that can capture this, mutually recursive. But the interesting thing is, right, the search space can be very, very big and you need to come up with ways of dealing with this. So you can try and do pruning, for instance, right? But even that is not generally going to be good enough, right? Or because, well, the naive approach is not going to work because most of the time your trees are so big that even given a particular amount of time, if you have limited resources, you can only explore so much of the tree. So then you need to come up with ways of adapting the algorithm so that you can do, say, okay, I'm going to have a cutoff, and I need to come up with an evaluation function of some kind, as opposed to being able to say definitely this is the utility of being in that state, because you can't know whether going down this branch will lead you to a draw or win or losing, right? So you have to try and guess based on the configuration or the features that you have for that particular state how good it is to go down this particular branch. And you use this then for pruning. But of course, once you start doing these evaluation functions, which are heuristic, you lose. What do you lose? What's the first thing you lose as soon as you have heuristics?
Accuracy.
Yeah, meaning? Not just accuracy. So you lose? Yeah, completeness. So you lose completeness, right? Because you're guessing. So maybe, you know, you're just going to go down a branch where you're going to lose eventually.